This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
The Great Unwind. The Federal Reserve plans to remove the economy's extraordinary support, which has been in place since the Great Recession. But what happens when the training wheels come off? Ringing up sales, why some say consumers will spend more than $1 trillion this holiday season. Dealing with disaster, how Houston's newest landlords are helping renters displaced by Harvey. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Wednesday, September 20th. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Sue Herrera. Tyler Matheson is off tonight. It may be an October to remember. The Federal Reserve said next month it will begin to reverse its historic stimulus, which was put in place to help prop up the economy during the Great Recession. Its plan is to begin rolling off its $4.5 trillion balance sheet, which consists mostly of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Central bank officials are also hinting that one more interest rate rise this year is likely. As a result, bond yields rose and stocks were volatile. The Dow Jones Industrial Average advanced 41 points to 22,412. That is an all-time high. The Nasdaq was off 5, and the S&P 500 rose 1, also a record. Hampton Pearson has more now on the new era that the Fed will begin ushering in.
As expected, Janet Yellen and her fellow monetary policymakers left interest rates unchanged and announced the beginning of a plan to start trimming the more than $4 trillion worth of bonds and mortgage-backed securities purchased by the Fed to combat the financial crisis and the recession.
Our balance sheet will decline gradually and predictably. For October through December, the decline in our securities holdings will be capped at $6 billion per month for treasuries and $4 billion per month for agencies.
The Fed chair said there is a strong consensus among monetary policymakers for another interest rate hike this year. Even though inflation is below the Fed's 2% target and hurricane damage in Texas and Florida will have short-term negative impacts on the economy.
So if there are small changes in the outlook that require a recalibration of monetary policy, we will change our anticipated path and setting of the federal funds rate.
Leading economists and market watchers are concerned about the impact of trimming the balance sheet and the likelihood of more rate hikes.
I think they have to be very careful because it's a highly levered U.S. economy, it's a highly levered global economy, and currencies and the dollar and other related assets like gold will move substantially if the Fed overstates its case.
The Fed chair sidestepped questions about how fiscal policy, especially tax cuts and a possible increase in the deficit, might impact future monetary policy. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Hampton Pearson in Washington.
Let's turn now to Jack Ablin for more on the Fed and the economy. He is the chief investment officer at BMO Private Bank. Good to see you again, Jack.
Thanks, Sue. Nice to see you.
What did you think of what the Fed did today? Was it what you expected and appropriate?
It was exactly as expected, and it was by design. The Fed is trying to reduce the size of its balance sheet. And given the last time it thought aloud about doing that back in 2013 under Chairman Bernanke, we had, remember, the taper tantrum where everyone very concerned. And so this time around, the Fed wants to fully articulate its plan, map out its intention of reducing that balance sheet. And they said they were going to probably start reducing in October. And sure enough, this afternoon, they announced that, indeed, they're going to start reducing their reinvestment program in October.
So what does this mean to the average investor? It sounds like you're saying we won't see the type of volatility in the market that we saw the last time around when the market was a little bit unsure of what the Fed's intentions were.
Yeah, I think part of it is, Sue, that while the Federal Reserve is trying to at least reduce its reinvestment program, so that isn't even talking about selling holdings that it has. All it's doing is reducing the amount of reinvestment it has from the coupon payments and maturities that are coming due. And so we also, though, have still active buying going on in many central banks throughout the world. So I think that while the Fed is trying to pull back a little bit, we still have other central banks worldwide ratcheting up their buying.
And I guess the good news is that the Fed deems the economy healthy enough to be able to really kind of rejigger their balance sheet.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think that, they believe that reducing the size of the balance sheet or reducing these reinvestment may be the same type of program as raising interest rates. So we'll have to see if they actually go with a double barrel approach or if they may take a wait and see on raising rates while they see the effect of the balance sheet reduction.
All right, Jack, we will leave it there. Thank you so much. Jack Ablin with BMO Private Bank. As we reported, the Dow and the S&P 500 are at record levels. But if you're worried about valuations, the world's most recognizable investor says don't be. According to Reuters, Warren Buffett, the chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, late yesterday said the Dow will be over 1 million in 100 years. He also said that being short America has been a loser's game. And investors may be taking Mr. Buffett's advice to heart. After being one of the most disliked bull markets, a handful of surveys show a shift. According to the latest Gallup poll, optimism is at its highest level in 17 years. Investors also took a sharp bullish turn last week. According to the American Association of Individual Investors, and the most upbeat group of all were retirees. John Manley is here to talk more about the investor optimism that we're seeing. He is the chief equity strategist at Wells Fargo Funds Management. Good to see you, John. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Do these numbers and the sentiment surprise you or not?
A little bit. I mean, I think people still have a tremendous fear deep, slightly below the surface. There's a lot of nervousness that permeates this market. I still think that the U.S. economy is getting better and people don't really believe it.
What's it going to take, do you think, for them to believe it?
More of the same. I think we just need time to go by. I mean, time passes, time heals all wounds. I think that I didn't say that originally, but it's a good quote. I think that what happens is after a period of time, people, the terrible past fades into the past and people do what they do in America, which is spend money.
Yeah, exactly. The sentiment it was somewhat surprising to me, primarily because we have valuations that some say are pretty much fully valued. The stocks are pretty much fully valued. Would you agree with that or not?
I think they're actually highly valued, but they're sort of the low end of high. They're 18 times forward earnings expectations by my numbers. The average is 16 times. You know, it's not so much that it'll cause the market to come down by itself, but if anything bad happens, well, it's a little bit sharper decline than we would have had otherwise. But it's not a killer by any means.
The other thing is the lack of exuberance. I mean, maybe it really is different this time. Every time I say that, I think, oh, no. But maybe it is. I mean, there aren't too many other places to put your money to work other than the stock market at this point. So perhaps it is a little bit different. And we haven't seen that sign of you know, exuberance or investors being overly bullish.
I think it's the same as it's been. But you have to decide it's the same as it's been where. Where, when during the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're near a top like 1987 or a top like 1929. We're lifting off. This will probably end badly, but it could take years before we get there. I mean, bull markets by definition end badly or they wouldn't be the end of bull markets. But they go on for a lot longer than people think because there are still people who hold out who are waiting for that final decline. And it takes a lot longer and it takes a lot more evidence than we have for it to happen.
On that note, John, always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us. John Manley with Wells Fargo Funds Management. In Washington, Senate Republicans reached a tentative budget deal that would set up the broad outline for an overhaul of the tax system. It came down to two senators with different views. Senator Toomey had been looking for tax cuts that might reduce revenues by as much as $2 trillion over a decade. Senator Corker had been arguing for a smaller number. According to reports, that number could be about $1.5 trillion in revenue-reducing tax cuts. And today, Goldman Sachs said the tentative budget deal raises the odds of tax reform. And the Senate is pressing ahead with a vote on its health care bill. An aide for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he intends to bring it to the Senate floor next week. As we told you yesterday, the legislation would repeal central elements of the Affordable Care Act. Republicans must vote on the bill by the end of next week or lose access to special budget rules that prevent Democrats from filibustering. Well, consumer spending is a key part of the economy, especially during the holiday season. And with all the store closings, you might think that spending won't be all that good. But a new report today says sales could top $1 trillion. Bert Flekinger is here. He's managing director at Strategic Resource Insight Group. Good to see you, Bert.
Good to team up again, Sue.
Yeah, it's great to see you. $1 trillion. I mean, I know they say that round numbers don't matter, but this is a very big round number.
This is a big, important, record-breaking number, Sue.
Do you agree with that, that we could see that kind of sales?
Definitely agree. And we're going from the worst of times, as Charles Dickens might have described it in Tale of Two Cities, to the best of times in retail. And as you and John Manley said, stocks are fully valued. Retail stocks are undervalued. Mm-hmm. And this retail pushes past your $1 trillion number. A lot of good buys, particularly because there are a lot of great bargains for shoppers during holiday and going into the new year.
Talk to me, though, about how the sales composition will look, perhaps, because we report almost every day on either yesterday it was Toys R Us right. going into bankruptcy, store closings, reshufflings and things like that. Is it the online component that is going to drive retail sales?
Online is going to drive it because of price discovery. But the omnichannel retailers with the best combination of bricks and clicks, where Walmart is getting to be quite good. Macy's with Macy's.com, Bloomingdale's.com is getting quite good. We're seeing that worldwide. So you're going to have a meeting where Amazon's tremendous compounded annual sales increases of 25%, those will start to decline to 15%, and the omnichannel retailers are going go from negative 4 to plus 3. They'll start to pick up about 500 basis points per retailer over the next few years.
Also, the mix seems to be different in terms of merchandise this year. In the past, the consumer wasn't, or didn't seem to be anyway, all that enthused with some of the, especially the clothing options. But you say that's changed. The athleisure area is still hot and improving.
Athleisure is still hot in Cornell University, where I'm on the board of fashion and fiber innovation. Tremendous innovation. Talked to Kevin Plank last week. And Under Armour has tremendous innovation. And for sourcing, we're seeing a lot of retailers come back that you wouldn't normally think of. JCPenney, Walmart, others in basic fashion, they're beating Target. And in London, we're seeing Harvey Nichols and Selfridges really set innovation trends worldwide in terms of fashion, low-end to high-end, getting quite good.
It's going to be an interesting holiday season. Thank you, Bert.
Thank you, Sue.
Bert Flekinger with Strategic Resource Insight Group. Still ahead, Houston renters in housing limbo.
Hurricane Harvey hit homeowners hard, but it also put some of the nation's largest landlords to the test. We'll show you how they dealt with disaster coming up on Nightly Business Report.
A House panel is reportedly looking into some questionable Equifax trades. According to CNBC, the House Financial Services Committee is trying to gather more information on some options activity in the stock nearly 3 weeks before the company disclosed a massive data breach. The trading is considered unusual given the spike in volume, and it appears as if the size of that trade could have generated millions in profit. Toshiba has decided to sell its memory chip business, the Japanese conglomerate's most valuable asset. The company is selling the unit to a group led by private equity firm Bain, and that includes Apple and Dell Technologies. Price tag, about $18 billion. Now, for Apple, the deal could ensure a competitive supply chain and lessen its dependence on the chip division of Samsung, its biggest rival in the smartphone business. Toshiba chose the Bain-led consortium over two rival groups, including Western Digital and Taiwan's Foxconn. Boeing is firing on all cylinders. It's the best performing Dow stock this year, up more than 60%. The company is increasing production at its commercial unit, but its next leg of growth may be driven by its defense business. Morgan Brennan explains from National Harbor, Maryland.
Leanne Caret has been CEO of Boeing's defense, space, and security business for 18 months.
It's a transformative time, and it's one where it's exciting and it's fast-paced, and as we continue to identify opportunities that will make us better, that's what's most important.
While most people have flown in a Boeing plane, the company actually makes a third of its money selling military equipment to governments around the globe. And Caret has been restructuring that business, streamlining operations, relocating headquarters to Washington, D.C., and investing for growth, both organically, but also on the heels of the Northrop Grumman Orbital ATK deal through acquisitions.
We have a very focused strategy on our growth. That includes looking organically on where we're going to invest. But we also are continuing to look at other ways to increase our top line through mergers and acquisitions. And we have a continued pipeline we're assessing.
So you would be a buyer if the right opportunity came along?
Yes.
Are you talking to anyone?
We'll stay away from that.
As Boeing's commercial business soars, defense is poised to reap the rewards of increased government spending, both domestically and abroad. A business experiencing a dramatic reversal is fighter jets, as Boeing's legacy Super Hornet and Strike Eagle lines find new life under President Trump.
We're honored and thrilled that not only the Navy but others have seen the the benefits of the FNA-18 and continue to see a strong demand for it. We have a continued international pull on our F-15s.
Boeing is also competing for several high-stakes contracts, including the $85 billion replacement system for the ground-based leg of the nuclear triad and the $16 billion TX trainer program, for which Boeing built a brand-new plane. But Caret says some of the biggest future opportunities lie in the great beyond for new multi-million dollar satellites and exploration, which includes a mission to send American astronauts to space starting next year. Missile defense is also a priority, especially since Boeing is the prime contractor for the anti-missile system that's in place to protect the continental U.S. from an ICBM attack.
Heaven forbid North Korea were to test the system. Would it keep us safe?
Yes.
How do you know?
Well, I had, I have the honor and privilege of leading an amazing team of men and women who, and I like to say it this way, 400 protecting 400 million. But I also had the opportunity to actually be there for the test at the end of May, when, as you saw through public disclosures, we hit a bullet with a bullet.
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan in National Harbor, Maryland.
Changing consumer tastes hurt results at General Mills. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The food giant reported a drop in sales for the ninth straight quarter as consumers continued to shy away from purchasing cereals and yogurt. Profits also suffered. But the company says its optimistic performance will begin to improve a bit later this year, thanks to marketing and product ingredient changes. General Mills shares, though, were off almost 6% to $52.17. Microsoft says it's hiking its quarterly dividend by nearly 8% to 42 cents a share. The yield on that stock now sits above 2%. Shares of the software giant fell fractionally to $74.94. Best Inc., a Chinese startup specializing in supply chain technology, went public on the New York Stock Exchange today. The company priced 45 million shares at $10 apiece. That was at the low end of the expected range. The CEO said this is just the start and there's plenty of opportunity to grow.
We just started. I mean, we're still in a marketplace that probably has a, smaller market share, and that market growing at 20-30% every year annually. And by, providing better service to our customer with technology and integrated services, what we can do is continue to grab market share and so also create more needs and demands for our customers.
Best Inc.'s shares jumped 5% in their debut, ending the day at $10.52. Alnylam Pharmaceuticals reported positive results from a study of its drug intended to treat a rare nerve disorder. The company said it will present full trial results later this year and also seek U.S. marketing approval. Shares of Alnylam skyrocketed 51% to $113.84. Meanwhile, Ionis Pharmaceuticals, which makes a competing drug, saw its shares fall nearly 9% to $53.88. And BlackBerry says it is partnering with the car supplier Delphi Automotive on an operating system for Delphi's autonomous driving technology. The two companies said the goal of the partnership was to create a system that improves the safety and the software performance in self-driving vehicles. Shares of BlackBerry finished higher by 7% to $9.85. Sales of previously owned homes fell in August to the lowest level in a year. Economists say despite strong demand, the drop reflects a shortage of properties on the market. And Hurricane Harvey also resulted in a 25% decline in Houston home purchases. According to the National Association of Realtors, existing home sales fell 1.7% from the previous month. The median price of homes sold last month reached more than $253,000. That's up more than 5.5% from the year before, more than double the growth in Americans' income. Hurricane Harvey displaced both homeowners and renters and put America's biggest and newest landlords to their first real test of how to deal with disaster. Diana Olick is in Houston tonight.
They are testing for water and at the same time testing the strength of a brand new asset class of single-family rental homes. When you started this company, did you think about a disaster like this hitting thousands of your homes?
Well, you have to prepare for everything, and you can't imagine what a storm like this. This is unique.
And it's
our first test.
Starwood Waypoint owns about 2,800 homes in the Houston area. It is one of the new breed of rental companies that bought tens of thousands of foreclosed homes during the housing crash and turned them into lucrative rentals. In preparing and responding to the hurricane, apparently bigger was better.
We were able to use the scale of our platform, professionally managed across the country, and utilize our resources internally and externally to put together vendors. We put together a task force. We communicated. We used our technology. And then we prepared.
For renters displaced by Hurricane Harvey, Starwood Waypoint says they will let them out of their leases and refund any security deposits. The hope, though, is that once the renovations are done, those renters will move back in. American Homes for Rent, which has about 3,200 Houston homes, is doing the same. Like Starwood, it had to assess damage, find and relocate renters, and begin the extensive repairs.
Our response time was significantly faster than the individual landlords or the mom and pops because we have the communication centers. And so we were in communication with these tenants before, immediately the day after. They knew exactly what our plans were.
Shonda Marie Lewis is one of those tenants. She lived here just 9 months before the floods and was immediately moved to another company property.
They were very organized, very professional. I received one call after the next. I couldn't hardly keep up with the names. They called me, they checked on us, they emailed us, made sure we was okay if we needed anything. Even when I went through the process, the lady, even after hours.
Starwood's Young says the aggregate cost of Harvey to the company was about $10 million. Much of that, though, covered by insurance. As for what they could do better next time, just do it all faster. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Houston.
Coming up, America's billionaires give back. But who's giving the largest share of their wealth to charity? Albertsons is buying the meal kit service Plated, a rival to Blue Apron that offers meal kits through the mail. With Albertsons' purchase, Plated will now be available in Albertsons grocery stores nationwide. The price paid not disclosed. But the deal helped lift shares of Blue Apron in late-day trading. Albertsons and Plated are privately held. There are reports tonight that Amazon is ramping up conversations with a group of drug middlemen known as pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. PBMs are a critical part of the drug supply chain. According to Axios, those talks could indicate that Amazon is making an effort to get into various contract arrangements, potentially disrupting the industry. That sent shares of CVS and Walgreens Boots Alliance lower on the day. America the Charitable. There are a number of billionaires in this country, but of these, who is the most philanthropic? Robert Frank has the list of names.
Among the top 10 billionaires in America, Warren Buffett is the most charitable. The Chronicle of Philanthropy did an analysis showing giving as a ratio of total wealth for the 10 richest people in America since 2000. Warren Buffett topping the list, giving away more than $46 billion since 2000. That works out to more than 70% of his $66 billion fortune. Now, Bill Gates is still the richest man in the world with a fortune of more than $80 billion, but he ranks second for giving with 22% of his wealth going to charity since 2000. He and Melinda Gates, of course, have given away more than twice that since they created their foundation in 1994. Michael Bloomberg ranking third with 10% of his fortune, but that does not include all of his giving before the year 2000. Now, the Google guys, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, have given away more than 4% of their total wealth, and David Koch has given 3% or more than $1.2 billion. Now, Jeff Bezos, currently the second richest American and on his way to becoming the richest, is last among the top 10 when it comes to philanthropy. He has given away around $68 million since 2000, less than one-tenth of 1% of his fortune. This summer, Bezos took to Twitter to ask the public for advice on his strategy for giving. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank.
And that is Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow.